Has everyone noticed that Fulham are really good now?
Wilson, lovely ball. Smith Rowe, Sanchez saves. Wilson again. And Wilson does it again!
And so are Villarreal.
And that'll do it. Villarreal 1, Athletic Club 0. And 4 for 4 from home games in La Liga for the Yellow Submarine.
Hello, I'm Ian McIntosh and welcome to Route 1, now available 3 times a week, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. It's football fast, no faff, so without any further ado, let's go Route 1 in association with Fitstairs. On November the 11th, the TalkSport website ran a story entitled Marco Silva's Fulham Future Thrown into Doubt as Club Fear Relegation. And this isn't a dig at TalkSport, because this was not an outlandish take. Fulham lost 4 straight Premier League games through October. They paused briefly to thrash Wolves, as was the custom of the time, and then lost to Everton. And besides, Silva's contract's up at the end of the year and he's not exactly known for sticking around. 6 months at Everton, 6 months at Watford, we get gold watch for that to be fair, 6 months at Hull, 12 months at Olympiacos, 12 months at Sporting. He was basically the littlest hobo in a tracksuit.
Maybe tomorrow I wanna settle down. Until tomorrow I'll just keep moving on.
Ask your parents.
So if you wanna join me for a while, just grab your hat, come travel light, that's old style.
But look at them now. Wednesday night's victory over Chelsea was their 4th win in 6 Premier League games, and they drew the other two. They're up to 9th, and this season is so weird. That means Fulham are 2 points off 5th, and the Champions League place that may go with it. And they're not doing this by accident. This, as Liverpool found at the weekend, is a really good team. Raul Jimenez is one of the most intelligent forwards in the league. His deft headers have popped open defensive lines across the Premier League this season. Emile Smith-Rowe and Harry Wilsonio may have been deemed not good enough for Arsenal and Liverpool, but with the trust of Silva and extended runs in the first team, they blossomed in West London. Anthony Robinson would get in most Premier League teams. And if you don't believe me, check his tackle and interception numbers for last season. His return from injury will see him rising up that table again before very long. And then you've got Joachim Andersen, who's your archetypal, he'd head away a jumbo jet if it flew into the penalty area sort of centre-back. This run of form has been really special. Confidence is clearly soaring. None of their next 4 fixtures bring them into contact with Champions League contending clubs. So how far can they go? And how much impact will this run have on Marco Silva and his should-he-stay-or-should-he-go decision-making process this summer? Sammy James is the host of the brilliant Fulham podcast, Fulhamish. Sammy, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this run of form has certainly caught me by surprise, and to be honest, a lot of other Fulham fans as well. When we saw the fixtures over the kind of festive New Year period, coupled with the fact that we'd lose 3 of our key players to the AFCON, all representing Nigeria, Bassey, Iwobi and Chukwueze, I was fearful that I didn't think Fulham would get no points in this period, but still, I assumed that we'd end this period around 15th, 14th. The fact that we've not just survived, but actually thrived in this period, I think all the credit has to go to Marco Silva. He has a squad right now of about 12, 13 players who he would actually pick as first team starters. And just game by game, grinding out results. We are always in matches. We often win games narrowly and lose games narrowly. I don't remember too many times where Fulham have just been comprehensively beaten, really under Marco Silva's entire tenure. Sure, there's a few examples here and there. He just knows how to get the best out of a squad. There was a lot of uncertainty and dissatisfaction at the start of the season. I don't think any Fulham fans were very pleased by the kind of lack of transfer activity. And when we did lose 4 in a row, Marco really did come under some serious pressure. It helped that we played Wolves when we did, because that ended that run of 4 defeats. But then that defeat to Everton, I think there was a lot of questions being asked of him. And Marco was making a lot of noises in the press. But actually, since then, he's kind of got his head down, stopped complaining about transfers, stopped complaining about referee decisions to a point, and we've just dug in. I'm really excited for the second half of the season when you consider that we've got the 3 Nigerian players to return, Rodrigo Muniz to return from injury. We're also currently playing without players like Kenny Tete, Ryan Sessegnon, Josh King. if we can get the squad back for the February, March, April period, I actually am hopeful that Fulham maybe could actually hold on and really achieve something historic in the second half of the season.
And you can find Fulhamish wherever you find your podcasts. The most recent episode boasts one of the finest titles I've seen in some time. In tribute to carrot-topped match saver Harrison Reed, it is Redhead Redemption. Nice. Fulham are currently 6-1 to finish in the top six with our friends at FitzDes. They're 33-1 to finish in the top four. If you like those odds, if you'd like to see other odds and you're over 18, check out FitzDes.com. But please gamble responsibly. After Manchester United on Monday, and then West Ham and West Brom on Wednesday, I became very aware that the show was feeling, well, a bit sad. I don't want to be Kate Ady, the Angel of Doom, wherever I appear death follows, that sort of thing. So we're doing a happy episode today, and the joy continues with one of my favourite stories from Europe this season, the continued success of Villarreal in La Liga. Now, they say never go back, but they clearly don't know what they're talking about. Going back has worked out pretty well for manager Marcelino, who left the club after a row with the board in 2016, returned in 2023, and has clearly picked up where he left off. Also, Jose Mourinho at Chelsea, Carlo Ancelotti at Real Madrid, David Moyes at Everton and West Ham, Tony Pulis at Stoke, Harry Redknapp at Portsmouth. I could go on. Villarreal are third with two games in hand. Were they to win those two games, they would be just a point behind Real Madrid and in with a serious chance of finishing second. Now, this isn't entirely unprecedented. They finished second in 2008 under Manuel Pellegrini and second in 2013 in Marcelino's first spell with the club. But when you consider the enormous wealth gap between Real Madrid, Barcelona and to a lesser extent Atletico Madrid, it's pretty incredible for them to even be in contention. Fergal Brennan is our man for Spain. Fergal, how is Marcelino doing this? How long can it continue? Do you think they'll hang on to their top three position?
We're all definitely in need of something bright and positive in the first couple of weeks of January, and the sunny yellow shirts of Villarreal are certainly doing that at this point in the La Liga season. Third in the rankings, as you mentioned, two games in hand and a chance to put some real pressure on Barcelona and Real Madrid, and probably more importantly, open up a bit of a gap between themselves and fourth-placed Atletico Madrid. Alberto Molero has been the star of the show, 7 La Liga goals. That's more than any other midfielder in the Spanish top flight so far this season, but it's actually defensively where they've impressed me the most. 16 goals conceded, that's the lowest in La Liga. And they've got a handful of defenders with a point to prove. Mourinho, Marin, Foyth and Vega all arguably can look back at the early part of their careers and say that they were let down or undervalued at so-called bigger clubs. They're now really, really shining for Marcelino. The big question, of course, is can they maintain it? Can they go on and claim second, third? It is going to be difficult because, as we know from years gone by, it's very, very tricky to break that hegemony of Real Madrid, Atletico and Barcelona. Girona did it a couple of years back, but it is very, very difficult. And for Villarreal, there are a couple of Diego Simeone-shaped clouds on the horizon, you could say, because once the Champions League settles back into pattern, Villarreal are not going to qualify for the knockout stages, so they'll be fully focused on the league. It all, for me, really depends on where and when Atletico drop out of European competition this season, because that's when they will click back into league mode and really put it up to Villarreal. February for me will probably decide how it all shakes out. They've got another derby against Valencia. They're away at Getafe. They take on Espanyol and Barcelona. Espanyol are having a fantastic season themselves. So at the end of February, if they're still in this position with an advantage over Atletico Madrid, then I might change my position. But Diego loves to be a party pooper, and sorry to pour cold water on the first week of January, but it's a long, long road ahead for Villarreal.
You can find Fergal on Twitter. There's a link in the episode description. What have we got lined up for the weekend then? Well, Friday brings us the quarterfinals of AFCON, Mali, Senegal at 4, Cameroon, Morocco at 7, both on Channel 4. There's Bundesliga on the beep. The Bundesliga is back, and the never less than entertaining Eintracht Frankfurt will play Borussia Dortmund. There's FA Cup football as well, but I think like most Premier League and Championship first teams, I'll probably give that a miss. Wrexham Forest is on TNT on Friday if you fancy it. Are you used to love the FA Cup, and the third round in particular, because it was a sort of one-day battle royale and everyone went for it, and final score on grandstand was genuinely exciting. And yeah, I'm old and the world has changed and the world must change, but I just can't get myself fired up for 4 days and 9 different time slots of what will effectively be reserve team football, because the sport has let slip the bonds of sanity and everyone's absolutely exhausted. As an alternative, there are 2 more AFCON quarterfinals on Saturday, Algeria and Nigeria, and Egypt, Ivory Coast, both again on Channel 4. By Leverkusen and Stuttgart, they play on Sky at 5:30. That could be fun. You see their former boss, Erik ten Hag, turning up at Twente as technical director, by the way. That's an odd move. Scottish league leaders Hearts go to Dundee on Sunday at 2 on Sky. That could be interesting. I'll have to do another bit on them soon. Rangers play Aberdeen again, this time at Pittodrie. That's at 4 again on Sky. Celtic play at 3 o'clock on Saturday. That's not on the telly. If you're not having any of the Scottish football renaissance, well, fair enough. But perhaps I could interest you in Inter versus Napoli on Sunday night at 7:45. That's on TNT. And there's the Spanish Super Cup on TNT as well, if you like your sport freshly washed. Thank you for your messages. You can contact us on Spotify in the comments section, or you can just find me on Twitter, Blue Sky, or LinkedIn. Sean got in touch on LinkedIn. He says, I love the show on Monday. Manchester United are glorious. Despite Amorim being rubbish for ages, they clearly had no plan at all for what they were going to do when they fired him. And I think you're right, Sean, but I also don't think they really expected to fire him. Ollie Kay was on the Athletic FC podcast this week. He was saying the club was still privately telling journalists there was no desire for change, even just a couple of weeks ago. So I think if Amorim had kept his mouth shut, or if that press conference had ended 2 minutes earlier, he'd still be the manager now. But I am baffled by their movements now. 2 more managers in 6 months is not what they need. They need stability. I thought they were mad in 2021 when they hired Ralf Rangnick as an interim manager, because you're just giving an unsettled squad excuses to fail. And sure, everyone's heart lifts a little bit when a former Fergie player appears and says they've chatted to the boss and he's given them their blessing, but unless Ole's coming back for good or Michael Carrick's being given a 3-year deal, there's no point. There's no point. They're 1 single point off a Champions League place. This is no time for a stopgap. Go and get Glasner now. Go and get Silva now. Go and get Southgate now. Don't stick the season on autopilot and glide home on vibes. Madness. Absolute madness. Stupidest club on earth. Christopher Martin messages on Twitter. So pleased to have found you, he says. I used to listen to the Football Manager show. I thought you'd left podcasting. Right. Well, I really need to have a word with my PR team. Michael Zakodny says, do a story on Legia Warsaw, it's chaos over there. I'll take a look, Michael, but I do fear it's out of my areas of specialism. Isaac Morgan, he appears on Spotify periodically to point out West Bromwich Albion mentions, of course, quite a big one on our last episode. Lovely to have you with us, Isaac. And you can get in touch with us, get on the show, drop us a line, leave a review, they're really important. Hey, we'll get you on the show. That was Route 1. It's Football Fast, No Faff, and it's here thrice a week, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. I've been Ian McIntosh. Your producer was Helena Fremantle. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll see you then.